does he do? He might go all the way. He gives it away. It's a chance. It'll be a goal. He wants to be wrong. He can. Come at the moment. Come at the champion. Yes! I don't believe it. I see it. I don't believe it.
This is a Swanscast Extra, the number one Sydney Swans weekend preview podcast. In this week's episode, we look back on the Adam Goods saga with the final quarter being displayed on Channel 10 free-to-air TV for the first time tonight. We preview the Swans' Round 18 match against the Dockers on Saturday night at Perth Stadium, and we also talk about the team changes, the match ahead, and we'll give you our matchups, key points predictions, and the weekend forecast. This is your host, Justin, and with me tonight is our long-lost guest, Stephen Treloar. Stephen, it's been a long time since we've had you on. You've been pretty busy in the absence, haven't you?
Yeah. Thanks for having me back, Justin. It's been a long time between drinks. Life and work and picking up a couple of jobs and that sort of thing means I haven't been on the podcast as much as I'd like, but no, it's good to be back.
It's good to have you back, and you're one of our foundation guests. I believe you were a guest on our second or third show all the way back in 2017.
Oh, back in the day, yeah.
Back when we were just starting things out. Back then, I think we were using a mixture of Skype and Messenger, so now we've kind of upgraded to a another internet solution, this time clean feed. Woo!
Yep, good plug.
Good plug, yep. Not in any way affiliated. But also, it's a big thing coming on tonight, actually, because of the Adam Goods saga, really. It's the final siren documentary was displayed on Channel 10 tonight. For most of us, it's the first time we will have seen it. I know for myself, it's the first time, and I believe for yourself, it was the first time as well.
Yeah, it was.
And I'd like to get your sort of thoughts and feelings on watching that documentary, because for me, it brought back a lot of the feelings I had at the time. I had a lot of anger when it was playing out between 2014 and 2015, but I just felt this immense sadness and a lot of empathy towards Adam tonight. It was truly like heart-wrenching at times watching that.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. It's been a couple of years since, that's all kind of died down after his retirement, but seeing all that happen again, I think all Swans fans would be feeling a bit of sadness at how it all played out, and at the same time bringing up that discussion again in light, with hindsight and all that sort of thing, I think it's a good thing. And I think they've done a really good job, the team who made the final quarter.
They
didn't embellish too much. They stated what happened, and I think not having Adam Goods giving like a direct interview, only having what he said to media at the time, I think kind of gives it a bit more credibility, I guess, in that way. Because I know a lot of people either, won't watch it because they have their own views, but I think the way they've done it makes it as kind of, as unbiased as possible. And I think that's great.
Yeah. It really was an amazing film to watch if you take out the content of the film, because as you said, it was told exactly as what happened. It was told in chronological order from the event all the way up to his very last match and the very last siren. And it didn't include any specific commentary or interviews about the matter. All of the commentary and interviews, which you may interpret as, were simply just TV snippets taken at the time from various different shows, radio programs, newspapers. And unfortunately, there was a bit of a majority that really sort of were overrepresented in the content that they were creating. And I'm not quite sure the name of the guy from the 7pm project. He's the comedian, the slim comedian who's on there. He put it succinctly.
Charlie Pickering.
Yeah, Charlie Pickering. He put it so succinctly and accurate and truthful in that it was just middle-aged white conservatives But that kind of misses some of the point, because you also had reporters like Rita Panahi, if I'm pronouncing her name right, and Miranda Devine, who were just putting out equally hateful things. I have absolutely no time or respect for them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, not trying to go too political into it. I kind of, you know, I kind of personally lean centre-right, I guess, but... Panahi and Devine, they're as right-wing kind of, you know, shock jock as they come, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of, I made a point of pride when I was blocked on Twitter by Rita Panahi. So I don't see or hear too much of her. I'm very happy with that.
Oh, I honestly wish the news outlets would just block her to begin with. You know, the one thing that's kind of made me happy in general is the fact that that grub bolt doesn't have as much say or influence in his journalistic endeavors anymore. He's, when you reflect back on it, in a way, it's not that surprising that Sam Newman, Andrew Bolt, and a few of the other journalists, especially Alan Jones, were saying such hateful diatribe about it, because they were doing that to other people about other things as well. And it just really came across as just this big bigoted push to just put down someone who was different. And, you know, Adam Goods, to his credit, you know, he said, you know, I'm not going out there to be a provocateur. I'm using my position to try and benefit people, to help educate people, you know, to help people. I don't want to be someone who wants to take the fame. That's not me. So yeah, it's just it was shocking to watch that, to be honest.
Yeah. And like, two points kind of come to mind at this point. Like, one, when Adam Goods, like, after he won Australian of the Year, he tried to advocate for constitutional recognition of Aboriginal Indigenous peoples in the Constitution. He, I think what he said direct from an interview was he wanted basically recognition that there were people in Australia before 1788, but before James Cook.
Yeah,
and he said, like, you know, in high school he was taught that James Cook discovered Australia, and, you know, that sort of recognition. And then Andrew Bolt comes along and talks about, you know, Indigenous people wanting a leg up, special rights, all that sort of thing, which Adam Goods did not say at all.
And then he also had that mention, or that spiel about, if we change the Constitution, it'll be constitutionally racist to have the division, despite the fact, and Adam's right, in the Constitution there's no mention of it. And you have to go back a decade to when Rudd came into government, and one of the big pushes of coming into government at that particular time was to apologise for the stolen generation. So it's not like this thing just came out of thin air, just this miracle of social evolution. Oh, we're going to do this. No, there's been plenty of push for it for the last sort of 10, 15, if not 20 years, for these sort of changes to come through.
Yeah, and do you think that when Rudd made that apology to the stolen generation, there wasn't nearly as much pushback as there was for Adam Goods?
No.
Not by a mile.
No. And, you know, a couple of the points of that film was, you know, I can't remember who said it specifically, but it was basically, it was someone who had exceeded his position, and that the booing was in a way trying to put him back in his box. Now, I don't know if he went to the games. I went to some of the games where he played, and the booing was filthy, and some of the actions of the crowd were filthy, and their anger and vile and vitriol that was just getting spewed over the fence was amazing. It was shocking. It was genuinely shocking to be at some of those games and to see the fans frothing at their mouths every single time he went either near him or he went near the ball. So, I mean,
And no other player receives any sort of reception like that. Not even, you know, Lindsay Thomas at his worst.
Well, I mean, to be honest, some of the things he did on the field probably deserved it. But as far as a person goes, I mean, for all rights, he was actually a decent person. So you can't really comment on him as a person. Mm. It's just how he went on the field. And I think that was what a lot of people used as well in the argument when they talked about Adam Goods, was how he carried himself on the field. I couldn't believe, like, the smug expression of Andy McGrath. And I remember watching that interview, and I remember wanting to throw a brick through the TV when I watched that interview when it first happened. I wanted to throw a brick through the TV again tonight when I watched it. It was when Andy McGuire is basically saying, oh, no, he's a great player, but he carries himself like an imbecile on the field. You know, stop diving, stop doing this, stop doing that. And it cuts to the panel. What have you got? You got mid-40s white guy. Now, that's not to say that the 40-year-old white guy is listening to the show. We're not lumping you in with that. Please don't take it that way. But there was no representation on that show for their opinions, and that's their opinions, and that's fair enough. But you get to the Martin Grook footy show, which was on a Thursday night the following week, and they made that point, that these people who are having these opinions, and they're right to have these opinions, you know, in my opinion, you shouldn't cut people down for having their own opinions. You know, that's part of freedom of speech. If you start censoring that, you might as well forget about freedom of speech.
Yeah, agreed.
But you have to have context with opinion. Otherwise, you're kind of just having an opinion for the sake of having one. And, you know, they say, you know, everyone's got an asshole. So the lack of representation, I thought at the time was pretty, pretty poor. And it was all coming from one side, you know, the more prominent... It was basically those with the biggest voice and the largest pockets could make their voice the loudest heard.
Yeah, well, Andrew Bolt's basically the biggest opinion journalist in Australia in terms of his audience, his readership. And, like, another point I'd love to make is that a lot of people don't like what Adam Goods did. I kind of hesitate to... you know, say that they're all terrible people and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Misguided, I think, yes. And I'm certainly not kind of trying to diminish the racial aspects that were involved in what happened with Adam Goods, but I think that's where the role of the media need to come in. You need to be able to explain what's happening. And I think Ross Lyon actually said it really well. Like, you know, is it racial... Yes, there's certainly that aspect of it, but...
He did come out and say, this is after the West Coast game. Is that the one you're talking about?
I believe so, yeah. So he said either, like, even if it's racist or it's not, you can see it's affecting Adam Goods, and, you know, the decent thing to do is to stop it. And it didn't, and that's where, you know, decency kind of flew out the window.
It was too much too late in the end, and... Everyone banded together. There was a lot of outcry of support, but it was far too much too late. We went into the final series and he was still getting booed off the ground. It was, you know, it was incredible in all the wrong ways. And even tonight, I mean, there is some element of probably truth to it. I can't remember the journalist who made the comment on the Channel 10 sort of... after show, after the final quarter. But he said there's an element of, you know, the sheep and the herd. There is a herd mentality where one person starts, other people do it just because. In a way, that's true. But I think a lot of people sort of excuse that for what actually happened. But look, I'll just read a couple of comments, because we put up a post not long after the show. Big thanks to Josh for this one. And we've got a massive amount of comments after it. This is just on Facebook alone. So Julian said, you know, I'm just so filled with anger at the comments from Andy McGuire and Sam Newman. You know, where's my round as a white heterosexual Protestant male? Yeah, exactly. And this is Sam Newman saying, I'm white. Where's my go? Where's my round as a white male? Completely and utterly ignoring what Adam Goods is actually campaigning for. Carol Cummins said, very sad to watch a true champion and a gentleman which I have met before. I remember being at the games and feeling so annoyed with the supporters booing. William Jayett, he said, this documentary should be sent to all Australian secondary schools as compulsory viewing year in, year out. In hindsight, the players of all clubs should have refused to play until the booing had stopped. Alex Ward, you know, she said, cried the entire time. I'm sure the likes of Jones, Newman, Bolt, etc. will come out tomorrow saying, I'm taken out of context. you can just see it coming. And I thought one of the poignant things before we move on, Stephen, was the fact that Alan Jones actually refused, or 2GB refused, to allow Alan Jones's voice to be played. So they had to get a voice actor in to play his voice. Now, you can imagine if his actual voice was played, just how incendiary and incredible and just hate-inspiring it would have been, because when he gets on a roll, he's a very passionate person, but it would have been very upsetting to watch, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think actually on the kind of after show that Channel 10 did, they actually did show a bit of Alan Jones on an interview with Channel 7. I wonder if Alan Jones will make a big point of that, but I mean, look, in the end, I hope these people realize at some point that, I mean, even acknowledge the validity of the other side of the argument, let alone kind of realize that they are on the wrong side of history here. And I want to give credit to two people who I have given a bit of slack to in the past, given a bit of crap to, Caro Wilson and Mark Robinson. I thought in the final quarter, what they showed those two saying, I thought was really well said.
Yeah, I agree with that. Look, I've been a fan of Carolyn Wilson's journalism. She holds no bars. She gives it to both sides equally as fiercely. And she's staunch in her defense of those that she's passionate about. And also, when she gets on a roll, she gets on a roll.
She wouldn't have a job if she didn't.
No.
I think that is that sort of outside of her, which has kind of made her career.
Exactly. And also Mark Robinson, who is kind of frequently referred to as a bit of a drunk on the show, but he was very good, very well represented, I felt, as well as being a staunch defender of Adam Goods. And, you know, I thought in that way, you know, there's such a... such difference just on that same Fox platform between the different commentators and the different shows. One show's at 7:30 and the other show's at 8:30, and there's such a difference in opinion of almost the same panelists or the same type of panelists.
So, yeah, great. I mean, it's a... But again, I mean, Michael O'Loughlin was in commentary for a bit of it, and I thought that was great, but I think the story, the way we look at it now, the way it was portrayed then, would have benefited more if we had it more of an Indigenous kind of, you know, presence there.
Yeah.
From the media.
Yeah. And, you know, that's probably one of the things that I think we'll reflect back on and say, you know, maybe that's where we've sort of fallen down. I'm not too sure who the main panelist is from the Mangrook show, because I don't necessarily watch it, but I know that he has been on Fox recently as a commentator. So they have been bringing in, or they've tried to add a bit of diversity into their pretty typical demographic of commentary team and analysts. So,
Gilbert McAdams is his name. Yeah, right. With Channel 7 as well.
Yeah.
Renowned for wearing sneakers on the football pitch with his suit. And he's brilliant.
All right. So, look, if you haven't seen the final quarter, the thing that we've talked about for literally the last 18 minutes, we strongly encourage you to go watch it. It is challenging. It'll sort of bring up a lot of mixed emotions. How you'll feel is completely up to you. I know for us, it sort of made us a bit angry and a bit sad. For me, I was sort of battling back tears at one point. And I know for a lot of people, they certainly would have cried. So there's nothing wrong with shedding a tear over it, because as far as society goes, it's probably one of our low points in the last couple of decades. And yeah, it's not a great look. Not just football-wise, society-wise, it is not a great look at all.
No, agreed.
Okay, so on with the rest of the show. Top of the agenda.
Yeah, right, yep.
Yeah. Team changes. So both teams have swung the cat, the changes cat, and somehow they managed to not even touch one wall, because four changes for each team. So, Stephen, I'll get you to read the ins, please.
Yeah, so for Sydney, we've got a debutant in Hayden McLean.
Woo!
Also coming in is Robbie Fox, Ryan Clark, who I believe is playing his 50th game, and Riley Stoddard as well. And losing their place in the side, Ben Ronk, a long time coming, some might think.
Yep.
Harry Cunningham out injured. Jordan Dawson unfortunately got suspended. And Kieran Jack, another interesting inclusion from last week, he gets admitted.
Yeah, he came in for James Rose, and he's out the next batch.
Mm.
I don't know what that says about James Rose, but I know what it says about Kieran Jack, and it says I think that was his last game.
So he didn't impress against Carlton, really, did he?
He wasn't even impressing in the NEAFL, so I'm not quite sure why he was selected.
Mm.
So it's interesting. It was an interesting selection last week. Not many people agreed with it. It left more, you know, had people scratching their heads than anything else. You're right. He didn't have a good game against Carlton. He was a passenger for the most part. And yeah, it just showed. Mm. Interesting team selections.
Yeah, definitely. And on the other side of the fence with Fremantle, they've got a big guy coming in Aaron Sanderlands.
Yes.
Quite literally big guy. Also coming in... Also coming in, first-year player in Brett Bewley, who's playing, I think, his third or fourth game. Griffin Logue and Taylan Dewman. And out for them, Ethan Hughes, Ryan Nyhui, and Travis Collier, and also some bloke named Nat Fife.
Yep, I love calling him Fat Knife in the show. It's something I misspoke like nearly 2 years ago when I was doing a podcast with Mrs. Bloggs. She picked up on it, and ever since then, I've just called him Fat Knife.
Fat Knife, yep.
Because he runs through a pack like a fat knife.
Sure does. No, I'll tell you what, it's a big sigh of relief that he's not playing against us, because I could just see him absolutely tearing us apart.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. It's actually really interesting when you look at the teams, because Fremantle have changed a lot of role players. So they've really got one major in and out, and that's Fife and Sanderlands. Whereas Sydney have lost about 300 games of experience. So, Kieran Jack's 250-odd, Cunningham's 113, Dawson's 20-odd, and Ben Ronk is 20-30-odd, right? So, it's roughly about 400 games. Mm. Then they bring in a debutant, a player who's playing his third or fourth game, another player who's played about 20-odd games, and a player playing his 50th game. So, it's about 80 games, 60, 70, 80 games. So, it's roughly like 300-odd games experience that they've lost. So, it's a pretty big change. We're going in with another quite young and very inexperienced lineup.
Yeah, not exactly new for us this year though, is it?
No. I wanted to get your thoughts on this before we move on to the preview. And this is kind of actually in the preview itself. Mm. So Robbie Fox, he has been brought into the team. And Adam Curley is one of the many people who have suggested that, also with McLean coming in. And he's coming in from South Adelaide. So he was recruited from South Adelaide in a sandful. He is 197, 93 kilos. You had Adam Curley on Twitter suggest that because of these two inclusions, Aaliyah is going to play centre-half back and Reed's going to play centre-half forward, and they're going to ruck McLean and Fox. Now, I had a
Fox
look at...
Fox is a ruckman, buddy.
I was like, no. Nah.
Oh,
as soon as I read that, I'm like, no, it's never going to happen, because I went and had a look at the team sheets, and then I went and had a look at the stats, right? Sanderlands is 211, 118 kilos.
Mm.
Right. Sean Darcy's 203 or 204 and like 111 kilos, 113 kilos.
Yeah, they're both absolute beasts.
They're monsters. So I'm looking at it going, Robbie Fox against these two, are you mad? Someone jokingly said, we might as well just put, you know, Ryan Clark in a ruck. Yeah, exactly, right?
Yeah, well, Tom Papley, why not?
No, bring in Ronk.
Yeah, well.
We could just bring Ronk back in, or Kieran Jack.
Late inclusion, yeah.
Hey, they're both emergencies.
The way I see... Well, I don't. The way I see it, though, like, I'd rather have guys like Robbie Fox and Hayden McLean being in the ruck rather than, you know, our probably arguably most important defender and currently most important key forward playing in the ruck. I mean... we've talked about it in previous... You guys have talked about it in previous podcasts, but that strategy, I think, has failed in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, Aaliyah's serviceable in the ruck and he did well against Zach Clark, although I was there at that match and I reckon Zach Clark was one of our best on ground, the way he was tapping the ball straight to us.
Yep.
But to have Aaliyah and Ree playing where they're
most useful, I think is an I think we'll see an improvement from the ruck situation and just general team structure as opposed to the past 2 weeks.
It'll be interesting. I think, because McLean hasn't played a match in the senior side yet. So this is his debut, which is the what the word debut means. Thank you, Brain, for finally catching up to what I'm saying. He hasn't played predominantly ruck either. So he's played mostly forward. He's played a little bit in defense. We're talking NEAFL, so NEAFL. Mostly forward, a little bit in defense, some ruck. So this is why I see like his selection being a bit of a risk. If you have a look at the team sheet, and this is the thing that I'm sort of looking at and relying on, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later on, but the team sheet has Alier in the ruck, which is where I think he's going to play most of the game. McCartan at centre-half back, which I think is where he's going to play the game, which leaves McLean to rotate with Blakey and Reed in the forward line. So I think his selection gives the team a little bit of flexibility in what they can do as far as matchups go in the forward line. And Robbie Fox is going to take Jordan Dawson's position at halfback flank, back pocket.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, if you include Fox as one of those potential ruckmen, we could have, you know, four guys getting hitouts in this match.
Well, Robbie Fox ain't going to get a hitout if he's in the ruck.
No. Well, that's just what I was about to say, you know, if they happen to get one past Sanderlands or Darcy. But I think, you know, you look at the Neapel side and there's Amati, who's a ruck forward playing mostly forward. You have McLean, who's a ruck forward playing mostly forward. And Darcy Cameron, who's injured. And then you've got Shannon Noll, who, you know... I mean, if I were him, you know, picks in the mid-season draft in the... You would think for the reason, you know, if Sinclair goes down, which he did, and the fact that he's not getting a game, he's not named in emergencies... I'd hope he's had a, you know, I hope he's had been able to sit down with Horse or the selection committee and say,
where's it going?
What do I need to do? And yeah, because what's the point of me being here?
Yeah, exactly. And I've said that about Darcy Cameron for the last sort of couple of years. We've had this argument really since the start of last year in that we need to get a second ruckman into the game. And Callum Sinclair, like the whole fear was Callum Sinclair was going to go down with injury. And it was going to happen at some point. Like no ruck can ever play 2 full years without injury. It's extremely rare that that actually happens.
Yeah.
You just got to look at Matthew Cruiser at Carlton. I mean, that guy is a gun when he's fit.
Oh, God.
But he plays like 10 games a year if he's lucky.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's... We dug our own hole for this one. We were forced to play Towers and Fox in the ruck. And, I mean, kind of remind... This is like the time when we actually want Towers back because he could actually jump, so...
Yeah. In a way, this all kind of goes back to the way we handled Toby Nankervis as well.
Yeah.
He was that sort of guy who we hoped would be that second ruck, but, you know, took his time to come in, all that sort of thing. And now he's gone and is, you know, injury aside, again, there's an injury point. Best ruckman at Richmond, premiership winning ruckman.
Yep.
And I could see the same thing happening with Darcy Cameron. There's talk that, you know, guys like North Melbourne might go after him, that sort of thing. And I could totally see that happening again.
He's too good to languish in the state leagues, but we haven't given him a chance. And the one chance that we gave him was the wrong chance. It was against the Wicks. Yep. All players to debut against. They debuted against Wicks, who is an elite tap ruckman. He is one of the top three ruckmen in the league for hitouts, right? And he got destroyed by him. And you go to any NFL match that they've played, whenever he's played against a super dominant tap ruckman, you're talking like Dawson Simpson or Wicks when he Jared Wicks. Whenever he's played against Wicks, he's been destroyed in the reserves. So he's going to destroy most players. There's no question about that. And, you know, that's what happens. So, but yeah, look, let's move on to the preview of the match. We're playing Fremantle for the first time at Perth Stadium. This is a great sort of event for us because we've played once and we have a 100% winning record.
Thanks to Buddy.
Thanks to Buddy, who then did his heel and who could only train for 30 minutes for the rest of the season. So,
I don't like Optus Stadium too much.
No, not at all. It's not our favourite stadium, and we're going to have to do this without Franklin. We did beat them the last time we played them over in Perth, which was at Subi. Then the previous time we played them at Subi, they absolutely flogged us. So it is interesting. We do have a decent record against them, actually. We've won the last three, and after that, for the next five or six, it's pretty much 50-50. So, history-wise, yeah, it's a good sort of matchup. We do have the wood over them, praying for not another draw, you know, Sam Reed, Mark on the line sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the last time it was, you know, 79-111 to 7-10-52. I wonder if you remember much about that match, Stephen?
It's all a bit of a haze to me, actually, mate. But yeah, I remember, you know, Jake Lloyd racking it up as per usual, Sandy winning the ruck, which isn't a surprise with us in the past few years. But yeah, with a 59-point win, managed to get over the line on that one.
Yeah, we got over the line in a big way. It was 7 goals to 2 at halftime, and they never really challenged after that. I remember commenting after the match, certainly in the offline and online as well, in the various social media channels, that it was really going to be between McVeigh and Lloyd for the three Brownlow votes and also for the coaches' votes. And as it were, the coaches' votes and Brownlow votes went to Jake Lloyd, who had 41 disposals, and he was absolutely phenomenal that match. That was one match where 41 disposals, and I reckon about 30-odd of them were absolutely quality disposals that actually did a lot for us and hurt Fremantle. Not like his recent 41 disposal, which was like 25 not like, chip backwards 10 metres.
Oh, sigh. Jake, what happened, mate?
Why did I bring that up? And Jared McVeigh. He was amazing in that game. That was one of his best games in the last two, three years.
Yeah, it was huge, wasn't it? With 31 disposals and the way he plays, he's got such classy use of the ball. If he gets 30 touches, you know, he's just going to have a huge impact.
Yeah, exactly. The stats were sort of, I guess, fairly weighted in our favour, if you could say that. We had 35 more marks. We had 72 more disposals. Of course, we got smashed in the hitouts, though. You know, 14-51.
Not surprising.
Not surprising at all. 10 more inside 50s. Believe it or not, this is at the SCG, so we've still even got 10 more inside 50s.
Mm.
But the thing that kind of concerns me about that match, and also our recent trend as well, is that we had 29 less tackles, 34-63.
Yeah, that's a huge discrepancy, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, going by last week, we got absolutely flogged in tackles. The week before, we only laid 3 tackles on Essendon in the last quarter, and that's how they were able to just sort of walk over the top of us in the end. Is that a bit of a concern for you?
Well, part of me kind of thinks, is this John Lomana trying to change the Swans game style into more of that kind of fast, free-flowing, you know, quick movement sort of thing? But you look at the results and clearly, you know, it's not the desired outcome. You still need to have that desire and brute strength at the contest, and I think it's certainly one of the main areas of worry.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. I wonder if it's more symptomatic of the changes that have been made to the AFL and the way that teams have responded. I think history kind of tells us that when rules are changed, teams typically go more defensive to shore up their teams and their structures and their game plan and their style before becoming more attacking.
Yeah, so the stats kind of do agree with that. I mean, they've implemented the 6-6-6 rule to open up the centre bounce contests and, you know, ideally improve the scoring, but scoring's actually gone down 2 points per game this year.
Exactly. And the interesting thing is we're ranked 5th in the league for tackles. We're actually in the top 3 at one point. We've got 1,038 for the season. Hawthorn is first with 1,076, so we're only like a little bit off the top. Fremantle's second last with 921 tackles. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, they are way off the boil, but their start of the season was a hell of a lot better than ours. But I just want to sort of bring you back to, you know, the Carlton game, which I felt we lost because we didn't work hard enough defensively. You know, we got some intercepts, we got some marks, you know, there's some, you know, defensive acts. But we lost the tackles, you know, 68 to 81, and tackles inside 50, 11 to 14, they really outworked us.
So, yeah, Carlton are in a stage of transition and, you know, less pressure on them with an interim coach. And, you know, some of the Swans players might have realised that, you know, finals isn't really going to happen this year unless a miracle happens. So yeah, you kind of wonder how much of that's just psychological as well.
Yeah, it really is interesting. And look, I mean, the clearances, we got beaten on by 8, which is pretty much stock standard for us. We have more contested possessions, more contested marks, and more marks inside 50. So that really showed we had Franklin in our forward 50, that he was the main target. He kicked 3 goals, 3, I think it was. So we don't have Franklin. We actually have a very young and inexperienced forward line this time around. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. They do have a pretty decent forward line, all things considered, especially when you look at it. They've got Cam McCarthy. They also have Darcy Tucker, who can take a mark. Michael Walters, who's definitely one of the best small forwards in the league at the moment. And Rory Lobb, who is at least 6 or 7 centimetres taller than any of our defenders.
Yeah, and here's another one who could go into the ruck and absolutely smash anyone he really put up there, I reckon.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, I really rate his contested marking as well. I think he'll be a real threat up forward. And Sonny Walters, you know, can change a game off his own boot so easily. He's someone we'll really need to clamp down on.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing about Rory Lobb is he was actually regarded as one of the best contested mark players early in his career. He just kind of went off the boil for a while there. But yeah, those two players, Walters and Lobb, they can kill us in the forward line. And I just feel that having Tom McCartan on Lobb is a recipe for disaster. I'd be a lot happier with a Lear on him.
Or Melican.
Or Melican. Oh, man. I can't believe you said that. Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. It's...
Oh, no.
Doesn't it just make you shiver?
Oh, it does. Oh, God. Intermission.
Welcome to intermission.
He's been waiting down there.
Waiting. This week, Hayden plays his first game for this footy club. Missed a couple of drafts. He's playing because he's a competitor. It's just a great experience to be able to do that and something to be really proud of.
And we are back. So thank you, Stephen, for that absolutely classic insight there on matchups. Let's not dwell on that specific matchup and move on. It is now time for our Player of the Year. Your votes are in. The crowd has spoken. We have listened, and we have our 5 top players from the very disappointing, shall we say, Stephen, Carlton match. So.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to pick 5 myself, and I was struggling. But anyway, we'll go through them.
Please lead on.
So, 5 votes, Luke Parker. Parks with 5. Dane Rampey had 4. Jake Lloyd with 3. Josh Kennedy with 2. And Isaac Heaney with 1. Bit surprised to find Aaliyah not in the votes there.
Yeah,
he did pretty well, considering.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people said. And he had team high clearances or something as well.
Yeah, so, that was ridiculous.
So Aaliyah had a decent game, all things considered, when you think about... I guess what you have to compare it is, it's almost to like a Dean Towers. If Dean Towers had played like that, would he have been in the votes?
Yeah.
I think yes. So I think Aaliyah's just set this such ridiculously high bar that he just has to get up there all the time. So it's good to see Dane Rampey and Jake Lloyd amongst the votes again.
Yeah, true. They're valuable players for us at the moment. If they go down, we are screwed.
Yep. Leaderboard, I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. We're a bit behind on the calculations there.
We'll post an update on that one.
Post an update on that one, probably next podcast. I blame illness, holidays, and being lazy on that one. Sorry, guys. Social question time. So our social question actually is about the final quarter, which we did spend a bit of time at the start of the show talking about. So the question that we put out to you was, it's a big night for the Swans with the Adam Goods documentary, The Final Quarter, being telecast on free-to-air on Channel 10 for the first time. The relentless booing, Australian of the Year, the attacks and why. The documentary covers it all, with Sam Newman one of the main agitators. Let us know what you think and how you feel after watching the documentary. So we got a number of responses on that specific thread. We also got a lot of responses on the other one, which you've already touched on. But we're just going to pick out a few of these, Stephen. And I'll just get you to pick out the first one that you'd like to read.
So this comment's from Matt English, and he says, I'll say this. I lost respect for Adam after he walked off the ground against the Pies. Yes, I get why, but he is slash was a highly paid professional sportsman. I just think he could have handled it a bit better. Do I agree with racism? No, in all caps. And what he went through was just wrong. But what I do find funny is that a bunch of white guys saying it's not racist. And I'll just cut in there and say that as two white guys, I'll say, yeah, thanks for that, Matty. it might have started off as an innocent whatever, but at the end of the day, I believe that it was racism, fueled by both sides of the argument. Looking back, I also think the Swans family could have helped him out. Every time he got the ball, we should have cheered louder and harder and longer than those dip bleep that booed him. We are all in part a little at fault. A little too late, a little too quiet. And I do see where he's coming from there. Like, there is a... Adam was not hesitant in, you know, saying that what was happening was wrong and that changes ought to be made. But I think the Swans, you know, as a supporter base, I will admit we're not the loudest, craziest fans.
No.
But I think what we did do, especially because there was a Indigenous round, I think it was 2015, his last year, where he didn't play that game. He took a leave of absence, and we completely got around him then. I think that was a real highlight of the documentary itself.
Yeah, and also, you know, the wider AFL community and the players as well. You know, it's a shame that players themselves didn't don the 37 for an entire game. You know, it was really good to see Bobby Murphy put on the 37 to do the coin toss. I believe Sean Burgoyne wore 37 that round as well, if I can recall. I can't recall it, but I do remember something like that happening.
Mm.
You know, so there was a lot of support for Adam. It's just a shame that for all the support that came from the players, it wasn't reflected in the stands. If anything, it actually got a lot worse in the stands. And the real crescendo came from West Coast, and this is what you talked about earlier with the Ross Lyon issue, was when Lewis Jetta basically had enough of the incessant and constant booing, that he did his own war dance and just gave the fist up sort of thing to the West Coast players, yeah, which was basically saying, shove it up your ass.
Yeah.
And they just went absolutely nuts. And then you had Simpson come on afterwards saying, we can't have that. We are not going to support that. That was not what we stand for as a club, and we're not going to stand for it again. You know, our supporters will not be doing that again. And Ross Lyon as well said, yeah, it's racist. If you boo, you're racist. It's clearly racist. So, yeah, it's good that he's sort of come in from that side and he's explained why, not sort of jumping on, I don't like this because he's either diving, he's a sook, he's a whinger, he fakes a free kick, he slides, he dives, he faints, he fakes, he's Aboriginal, he's outspoken,
yeah,
he's Australian of the Year, shouldn't be an Australian of the Year, etc. so forth. I mean, there is like 100 different excuses.
Yeah, to the guys who say he's soft and a whinger and all that sort of thing, just watch the 2012 grand final and watch him basically win us the game off one leg.
And that leg, like, was already busted anyway.
Yeah, he was just remarkable that game, and tough as nails.
He played 200 odd games in a row, despite the fact that he'd blown up one of his knees, and at the time he shouldn't have been playing, but he still played anyway. So, yeah, I mean, that takes a lot. And he played 370 odd games. So 373 games, I think it was.
Yeah.
So you don't play 373 games at AFL football being a bit of a sook or a wimp. I'm just going to read one. And this is from Matt Hickey. Yep. his head heartbreaking. I was at a lot of those games, Collingwood and Hawthorn and Melbourne. Watching tonight jogged my memory as to how long the booing went on. Not quarters, not months, years. I, like many I assume, became relatively accustomed to it. It began to wash over me and the public itself. It became pretty expected and even normal, so very sad. Yeah, I can understand that, because I did go to quite a few of those Melbourne games, and I went to a few of the ones up in Sydney. And, yeah, I just remember at the time, the Carlton crowd were absolutely filthy. And then the North Melbourne ones were rancid. But I would say the worst ones, or the worst offenders, were was Hawthorn.
Yeah, it was a bit of a draw for me between, you know, West Coast at Perth and Hawthorn. Yeah, it's just really sad to see.
Hawthorn, I was extremely disappointed in, given the fact that they themselves had such a strong Indigenous presence, and certainly over their club history. I mean, some of the best Indigenous players ever to play the game played for Hawthorn. And West Coast, yeah, I can kind of expect it in a way, because West Coast are very parochial. They boo everything. It doesn't matter. They'd boo a 6'10" white guy running out there if they weren't playing for West Coast. They boo him, and they do. So yeah. They boo everything.
They'll boo Andrew Brayshaw for getting his jaw punched by Andrew Gaff.
They'll boo Andrew Gaff for not punching him out again. Well, that's probably going to be extreme. Yeah. But they boo everything.
Well,
I mean, but what they did as well is unacceptable. They went well beyond what was socially acceptable that night. But the point I'm making is, it's not totally unexpected when you see that in a West Coast crowd. It was unexpected in a Hawthorn crowd, given their rich history with Indigenous players. And at that time, they still had some pretty bloody good Indigenous players in their team. They recently lost Lance Franklin only a year or two early, depending on which year you look at. They still had Cyril Rioli. They had Sean Burgoyne. I can't remember if they had Brad Hill at that point. They had quality players, quality Indigenous players. And they've had a lot of quality Indigenous players over the sort of club history. So it was just very surprising, very disappointing. And before we move on, I just remember being at the crowd, and I'd ask someone, why are you booing? Just because.
Yeah, it's not good enough, is it?
No, it never is.
That's just not good enough.
No. All right, let's move on to the next thing. Matchups, key points, and predictions. Matchups, so I'm going to go first. This is a little hard for me to sort of figure out who it was, because... yeah, it's interesting. All the matchups seem to be all over the shop at the moment. But I'm going Luke Parker and Reece Conker. Mostly because Luke Parker's form up until last week was actually really, really good. And it was one of the main reasons why we've been playing good football and winning games. Conker's... I don't know if Conker's as good as he used to be at Richmond. But we need Luke Parker to get on top, and get on top in a big way for this one.
Yeah, we need to win at least one or two of those key midfield matchups. Get that first use of the ball, get those inside 50 counts up, definitely.
Yeah. Your matchup, please.
Now, mine is Sam Reid and Joel Hamling. Hamling's kind of one of their main defensive pillars with Alex Pearce gone for the year. And Sam Reid hopefully will be playing a lot more forward rather than ruck. And he's our most important forward at the moment. Just kind of pure and simple. You can't really expect Blakey to turn a match on his head.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be a key kind of, you know, matchup to determine who will win the game.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those ones where Fremantle, you never know what they could do. They could pull something out of the hat and do something completely different on it.
Yeah, yeah.
My key point is that the Swans have to improve their tackling effort. It just hasn't been good enough over the last 2 weeks. 68 tackles is basically what their season average is. But this is for a team that only a few years ago were averaging nearly 90 tackles a game. 3 tackles in a quarter, in the final quarter against Essendon, not even close to AFL standards. So no. It's good to see them improve last week. But, I mean, look, Fremantle, let's be honest, Fremantle are kind of rolling out their B-grade midfield. But they still have their best defense and best forward line against kind of like what's a B-grade defense and a C-grade forward line for us. So it's going to be interesting. If we get the tackle count up and win midfield battle, it goes a long way.
Without a doubt. My key point was a key question, really. How does Clark play? Who does he tag? With Nat Fyfe out, it kind of does throw it into the air who he'll go to. I don't think he... Maybe Walters, when he's playing midfield, he could run onto him. Otherwise, maybe Mundy, if he plays midfield. Otherwise, you know, it may well be someone like Conker, who's... You kind of wonder who... Frio will take the game by the scruff of the neck, and
in the
past weeks when they've won, it has been Walters. So I guess it might be worth throwing Clark onto him when he is playing that midfield role.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think they're going to try and play him more as a ball winner, because you look at it and you go, who does he tag? There isn't anyone who's sort of that standout explosive midfield player. You know, when he went against Essendon, we're talking like way earlier in the year, not the recent one, but earlier in the year.
No.
When he played on Merritt, and then he played on Scheel. And he absolutely
very well.
Dominated them, both of them. And the previous week. It was when we played North Melbourne, he played on Sean Higgins and completely blanketed him.
Yeah.
And I think he only rotated once.
I was giving him votes for that match.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I had him up in the best because he played like 70 minutes in a row. So, it's an interesting one. Predictions, I'll go ahead with mine, is that Sandilands will get 50-plus hit-outs. He's returning to the side for God knows how long. If he plays with the rucks that we're going to put up against him, it's going to be impossible for us to get close. And I think it's going to be impossible for him to not get 50-plus hit-outs.
Yeah, especially when you include Darcy in there as well, who could, definitely more than handle himself. The ruck does scare me in terms of what could happen there on the weekend. My prediction, Roe Bottom to impress again. And I've got here Rising Star Nom, ?
Yeah. I
think he's one of those guys who does deserve it by the end of the year to get a nomination. He's been so good in the games he's played. That tackling pressure, I think he had 12 against Carlton.
He led
the team for tackles. If he can bring that tackling pressure again, it'll help a lot, and it's an important role for our midfield.
It is, and I think this is a good opportunity for him as well to show a bit of his credentials as a ball-winning midfielder, because that's what he is. Anyone who's a reserve watcher will have seen him shark the ball many, many times this season already, and he doesn't look like a big sort. He kind of reminds me... Not like Lockie Neal, but kind of like Tom Mitchell. That kind of skinny kid who just somehow, he's a ball magnet. He's just there where the ball is. Wherever the ball is, that's where he is. And he's a tackle machine too, which was what Tom Mitchell was early in his career. He was a tackle machine. And I still remember that job he did on Sam Mitchell. So, yeah, I like it. I like it. I really hope he does because it's a good opportunity for him. Weekend forecast. Sure thing, Stephen.
I've gone, continued with the Swans Freo game, and I've gone Lloyd to get more than 30 touches, but not good ones necessarily. So I reckon he'll continue his form of racking him up, being a AFL fantasy gun. But not perhaps having as much impact with the balls he'd like.
No, he's been a fantasy legend this season. That's about the only legend that he's been this season. Unfortunately, he has not been that particularly good for us. My sure thing is that Brisbane will affirm their premiership credentials with a solid win against North Melbourne. And now the interesting thing is, despite the fact that the Giants have an injury list almost as long as their entire team, they still play the Pies up in Sydney, and they do have a formidable record in Sydney, not just against the Pies, but in general. So, if the Lions win, and if the Giants lose, but the Pies only win narrowly, Brisbane into second place. If Brisbane win and the Lions lose, Brisbane into second place. So, come on, Brisbane. Hashtag Lions blog. I am
Lions
on
blog.
The
yes.
bandwagon. now, just to... refresh people's memories, they are playing Reece Shaw's North Melbourne, so I'm not necessarily a North Melbourne fan. I don't really not like North Melbourne. I love Reshaw, but sorry, Reshaw, you're not going to win this one, mate.
Yeah, the way Brisbane have been playing.
They'd be good.
We could wax lyrical on them for a while. We actually could turn into the Lions blog, really.
Yeah. Your most at stake, please, Stephen.
Now, it's a bit of an odd one for this one, but I reckon McLean has so much at stake for his debut game. If he doesn't have an impact, he'll be dropped next... I can see him easily being dropped next round. And that could well be the end of his AFL career. I don't see him necessarily getting a contract extension for next year. It's just, this is kind of do or die for him, I reckon.
It's a weird selection. I think it's safe to say it's a really strange, weird selection. When you've got, what about me, who hasn't played yet, and I'm sure he's sitting there and he's going, it's not fair, but I should stop singing. yes, we know his name isn't Shannon Noll, but we just love the reference anyway. When you've got a guy who's picked up basically in a very similar fashion to Hayden McLean, who's picked up for a specific role and a purpose, who's not even getting a look in, it just makes you wonder, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't mind it. Mine is West Coast's chances of a top four finish if they lose. So they're playing Melbourne at the MCG. And Melbourne in recent weeks have found a way to not look like a bunch of dickheads and assholes when playing football.
Shock horror, yeah.
Never say never. I mean, they invent new and hilarious ways of losing. They lost to the Bulldogs by 8 points. They comically almost lost to Carlton. They got spanked by Brisbane, and they did manage to beat Fremantle. So that's like their last four matches. As I said, never say never. So West Coast, it's going to be an interesting game. It's going to be a game definitely worth watching.
Yeah, definitely. And with Natanui out for them as well, it's a big loss for them.
Season-ending injury.
Yeah. But, I mean, they've proven they can do it without him before.
Yes, exactly. So they're going to have to do it again. Doomsday, please, Stephen.
Now, I think I might have mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but Melican playing on lob might be one of them.
Oh. Cut to intermission. Cut
to intermission. Yep. But I think I've thought of a worse one, and that's if Aaliyah gets injured.
Oh god, I hate doing these injury doomsday. Because we'd lose our fifth ruckman.
We lose our fifth ruckman and our second best or even first best defender.
Yeah. Basically our key defender.
That'll just be the absolute pits, because we have no one in key defence to replace him.
No.
Maybe Warm's out for the year. There's Toby Pink. That's about it. And if he goes, we're just gone.
At this point, I mean, the question is, do you play Toby Pink over McCartan? Well, that's not to denigrate the work that he's doing, because he's doing a half-decent job, but this is a 19-year-old guy who trained for two and a bit seasons as a forward and is now being thrown backwards and forwards in the same game. And his performances are kind of... you know, fairly reflecting those changes.
Mm.
Yeah. So
yeah, definitely. You do have to wonder what it's doing for his development.
A lot of bad. My doomsday scenario is Gold Coast lose by 10 goals to Carlton of all teams. If Carlton can get a win and they get a big win, it's not going to look pretty. It's going to be nail coffin kind of business, because the AFL is holding off trying to do some real support for Gold Coast. They're talking about supporting, and I'm doing inverted commas here with my little fingers or arms almost waving. They're talking about support. I don't know what kind of support they're talking about, because the kind of support Gold Coast need, the AFL aren't willing to give.
Yeah, it's an overhaul they need. It's not just a, you know, helpful hand sort of thing. It's a, you know, get the life support out.
Yeah, exactly. Off to intensive care. And Gold Coast have needed that for some time, and they probably should have needed a lot more attention and care back when Rodney Eade was brought on board, because performances under Blue and McKenna weren't that bad. I remember us talking about it at the time, going, wrong move, absolutely the complete wrong move to bring in Rodney Ead.
Mm-hmm.
Within months, the divisions were very, very clear at the club, and he was not getting the response that he expected, or the AFL expected, or Gold Coast expected. He got the exact response that we expected, which was complete and utter revulsion, and the players just didn't want to do what he wanted. So, yeah.
Yeah, Aaron Hall being a key example, you'd think.
Yep. Unfortunately, he's now at North Melbourne, and his career kind of seems to be not that far off the not far off the end. Unfortunately, injuries are kind of cruel to him there. But
yeah, and out with I think taking a mental health break as well, which is also a shame to say.
Yeah, very much so. You just kind of wonder what would happen if Rodney Ead wasn't brought on board. Would Gary Ablett still be there? So it's interesting. Cool. Look, anyway, thank you, Stephen, for coming on at late notice. And also, thank you so much for taking the time tonight to do this podcast, especially after watching the final quarter.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, Justin. I was, I think, yeah, no, it was very good to, you know, sit down and have a chat about such a, you know, I think valuable documentary.
Yeah, it was. And I really enjoyed having a chat about it, too. Look, we're going to be back on Sunday with a review of the Swans Freo match. However that goes, I'm praying for a win. Honestly, I don't know where I was going to go. Look at the team, and I'm like, I don't know.
Fingers very crossed.
I don't know. divine intervention. I might start praying at my bedside table, become a mid-30s conservative white male. No, I'm not going to do that. until next time, guys. Go Swans.
Go Swans.